take the background. Lord, may you receive all the glory that is due to your name this morning. In the name of Jesus. Amen. So I am really excited about what I'm going to preach this morning. I want to preach on the topic, the grace of God that is able to seek us out. The grace of God that is able to seek us out. And what I would like to accomplish this morning is to look at the story of a man who some of you maybe might have heard of him. Some of you maybe might not have heard, but it's a funny name, but a man called Mephibosheth. And I really just want to look at the story of this man, and I want to just highlight to us how similar we are actually to this man. I want to this morning hopefully bring the gospel before you to realize the work and extent that Jesus has gone to die for us on the cross, that you and I this morning were meant to be in a perfect relationship with God, and that through sin that we were separated from that perfect relationship. But thank you, Jesus, that he came so that that relationship can be restored between us and the Father. So I'm really praying this morning that if you are a believer, that there will be something in your heart again that is just stirred up afresh for the gospel of Jesus Christ, that we'll walk out of this this room saying, man, it's like a fire that is shut up in my bone. It's almost as if wherever I went, whether it's with my colleagues, whether it's with my friends, whether it's with my family, like, you'll find yourself in this space saying, I cannot keep quiet, I cannot shut up because of Jesus and what he has done in my life. And I'm praying this morning that if you're at a place where you don't know Jesus, that you will come out of this place knowing that he loves you and knowing that he wants to have a relationship with you. And that if you decide this morning to follow him, your life will never ever be the same again. So in 1 Samuel 18, 28, 23, we read about the story of two men, David and Jonathan. And we read about the covenant relationship that these two men had. And as part of that covenant, David promises Jonathan and says, Jonathan, actually, I don't want our covenant or our relationship to be cut. I want us to actually remember each other forever, in a sense. You know, so would we be at the place where, even though we're not here, maybe you and I have died, that this relationship or this covenant will actually extend to those who will come behind us, and that we will actually remind each other of that covenant that we are cutting. That even beyond death, that David, you know, bound himself to show covenant faithfulness to Jonathan's family. And then in 2 Samuel 4:4, we are introduced to this man that I talked about called Mephibosheth, who was Jonathan's son. And we read in the Bible that when the news arrived, same day that Jonathan had passed away and that Saul has passed away, Mephibosheth had a nurse who looked after him, and he was 5 years old when this happened. That when the reports came that your grandfather Saul and your father Jonathan, they've actually passed away, that the nurse took up Mephibosheth while he was still a young boy, and she actually ran with him. And while they were running, Mephibosheth fell down and actually became crippled in both of his feet. And in one tragic moment, we read about this story, but in one tragic moment, his family was gone. In one tragic moment, his security was shattered. In one moment, his life was rewrote forever. His life would never ever be the same after this moment. And then in 2 Samuel 9, David asks, he says, is there still anyone left of the house of Saul that I may show him kindness for Jonathan's sake? And in this story, we see this is where grace enters the story of Mephibosheth, the story of the one who was forgotten, the one who was far away from the palace. And hopefully this morning, as we read this story in 2 Samuel 9, verse 1 to 13, that we will see actually that you and I actually fits very well into this story. So let us read it together. So it says, and David said, is there still anyone left of the house of Saul that I might show him kindness for Jonathan's sake? Now there was a servant of the house of Saul whose name was Ziba, and they called him to David. And the king said to him, are you Ziba? And he said, I am your servant. And the king said, is there still someone of the house of Saul that I might show the kindness of God to him? Ziba said to the king, there is still a son of Jonathan. He is crippled in his feet. The king said to him, where is he? And Ziba said to the king, He is in the house of Maacah, the son of Amiel, at Lodabar. Then King David sent and brought him from the house of Maacah, the son of Amiel, at Lodabar. And Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan, son of Saul, came to David and fell on his face and paid homage. And David said, Mephibosheth. And he answered, Behold, I am your servant. And David said to him, Do not fear, for I will show you kindness for the sake of your father, Jonathan. And I will restore to you all the land of Saul, your father, and you shall eat at my table always. And he paid homage and said, What is your servant that you should show him regard for a dead dog such as I? Then the king called Ziba, Saul's servant, and said to him, All that belong to Saul and to all his house I have given to your master's grandson, and you and your sons and your servants shall till the land for him and shall bring him in the produce that your master's grandson may have bread to eat. But Mephibosheth, your master's grandson, shall always eat at my table. Now Ziba had 15 sons and 20 servants. Then Ziba said to the king, According to all that my lord the king commands his servant, so will your servant do. So Mephibosheth ate at David's table like one of the king's sons. And Mephibosheth had a young son whose name was Micah. And all who lived in Ziba's house became Mephibosheth's servants. So Mephibosheth lived in Jerusalem, for he ate always at the king's table. Now he was lame in both his feet. That is quite a mouthful of a story, and I know it's kind of long, but I hope that you followed along at what it is that is busy unfolding in this story, because I believe it's a story of grace and a story of the love of God actually being revealed to you and I in this story in the Old Testament. And the first point that I want to make is, as I read this, I realize that we were lost. I realize that we were far away from God, just like Mephibosheth. From age 5 to this age that we're reading about here, Mephibosheth was actually far away from Jerusalem. He was far away from the palace, far away from the king, far away from a place that he actually was raised up in. He was crippled. The man was broken. He was royal by birth, but removed from the kingdom. He was without an inheritance. And actually, he was an orphan, just like I am. He was living in a place called Lodabar. And if you go actually and do a bit of a search on what that name Lodabar means, it simply means a dry and barren land that is far away, where nothing actually grows there. It's a place of nothingness, a place of actually insignificance. So this is why the man finds himself. He's a man who you can just believe as a 5-year-old boy who's actually a royal, who's actually maybe one day was destined to be the king. Now he's crippled. So you can imagine the trauma that this man actually has had in his life. You can imagine how he was reduced to this insignificant life that he was actually in the first place was never meant to live. And as we read the story, and as I was just relaying this story, reminding myself of this story this week, it's so easy for you and I to say, I poor Mephibosheth. You know, it's so easy to look at this story and look at the man and say, ah, it is far removed. But I believe this morning, as I said, that this is actually a picture of you and I. This is actually a picture of where you and I actually found ourselves. That although we are created to be in this perfect relationship and communion with God, that through sin we were actually separated from Him. And this morning, I just want to highlight Ephesians 2, verse 1 to 3 and verse 12. And it'll actually highlight to give you and I a mirror of who we were. Actually, what we were destined for. And if we can just pull that up. So it says, And you are dead in the trespasses and sins, in which you once walked, following the course of this world, following the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that is now at work in the sons of disobedience, among whom we all once lived in the passions of our flesh, carrying out the desires of the body and the mind, and were by nature children of wrath like the rest of mankind. And then verse 12. And he says, Remember that you were at that time separated from Christ, alienated from the commonwealth of Israel and strangers to the covenants of promise, having no hope and without God in this world. Again, this is a mouthful, but I just want to repeat it to us, and I want us to remind ourselves at actually where we were before Jesus came into our lives. It says that we were crippled by sin and we were destined to die. That is you and I. That we were dead in our trespasses, that we were following the course of this world, that we were sons of disobedience. We were those who were driven by the passions of our flesh and our minds, that we were those who were by nature children of God, that we were separated from Christ, alienated from His commonwealth, strangers to the covenant of promise, without hope and without God, far off from God. You and I actually lived in our own Lodabar. Just like Mephibosheth lived, you and I actually were living in the same exact place. And this morning, as I was just preparing for this word, I was reminded of my own story of where I grew up and how I grew up. I was reminded of the fact that when I was a little boy, only a few years old, that I was molested multiple times by family members. I was reminded of the fact that when I was a little boy, 4 months old, my father decided to leave the house. I was reminded of a little boy that I was raised up in a family where I knew and I had a concept of who God was, but I also worshiped ancestors because that's what my culture required of me. I'm reminded of the fact that I was a teenager who was actually an alcoholic, who, because I had an identity crisis in me, because I was worthless, because I had questions of why did my father leave, I'm reminded that that's who I was. That's how far removed I was from God. That's how far removed I was from the commonwealth of God. That as a teenager, I was addicted. I was rejected, that I had an identity crisis, that I had no self-worth, but grace stepped into my story. That I was trapped in darkness, and Jesus said, I'm not gonna wait that this boy would die in his sin and in darkness. That he actually reached out into my darkness and decided to snatch me away. That I was transformed out of darkness into God's marvelous light. And this is not just my story, but it's our story together. That you and I were trapped in darkness and we couldn't do anything for ourselves, but God, through His mercy and through His grace, decided to step into our story, and He rewrote our stories forever. That although I was a young man who was actually being groomed in primary school to actually be a gangster, that God came and He said, I'm not going to allow for that to happen, that I will change the very nature of who you are to such an extent that there are people in my family, literally, when they look at me, these are the words that they say. They say, when we look at you, we can see that there is a Jesus that is alive. And I really believe this morning that it's not just my story, that if you would just quiet yourself down and think about your story. And I specifically want to speak about people who are maybe sitting here this morning, and maybe you're thinking, my story is not that rough. Maybe you're thinking, but I grew up in a loving home. I grew up in a family where I had both parents. You know, there's nothing of your story that I can connect to this morning, but I want to tell you that even the very fact that God spared you the details that I went through this life is a sign and a symbol of God's grace on your life. That it's not a coincidence that you had the kind of story that you had this morning. That don't look at your testimony and say, ah, man, my testimony is not powerful as your testimony. That even the fact that you were spared all your life, that is a sign and a symbol of God's grace and God's mercy, God's love over your life, God's favor that is on your life. And I pray this morning that you will share that testimony with confidence, realizing what it is that Christ has done for you. So this morning we need a sober reminder, you and I, of actually where we were. Because sometimes we have this tendency, or I have this tendency of actually minimizing my past. Sometimes I forget what I'm capable of without Christ. Sometimes I forget just the kind of stuff that I can do if Christ didn't step into my life. And I pray that this morning these stories, or even these verses that we're reading, will just fuel you again this morning with gratitude in your heart to say, man, I cannot believe that these are the extents that God has gone through sending His one and only Son, Jesus, to die for my sin. But perhaps this morning there's someone who's sitting here and you are actually finding yourself in your Lodabar this morning. That you're finding yourself in the same place that Mephibosheth found himself, far away from the grace and the love and the presence of God. And I want to tell you this morning that it's not the end of your story. That this morning there is a God who's actually busy knocking at the door of your heart, who's saying, I love you. Who's saying, my grace is sufficient to rewrite your past. Who's saying, when I look at you, I don't look at your past. I don't look where you come from. I don't look at what you've done. But when I look at you, I'm reminded of the work that my son has done and how he has died on your behalf. So this morning, I want to say that there is a grace that is available for you. A grace that is able to transform your life and that is able to rewrite your story. And that grace is found in no one else but Jesus. In no one else but Jesus. And the second thing that I want to highlight to us is, yes, we were lost. And thankfully, that's not where this story ends. But the second point that I want to make is that grace found us. That God actually reached out into our lives and he did a miracle. He did something that you and I couldn't actually do for ourselves. I am so glad that David remembered the covenant that he had actually made with Jonathan to say, is there still one? Is there still anyone of the house of Jonathan that I can still show mercy and kindness and grace towards? And David actually began to search intently for this man. And just to give you a bit of history, so Lodabar was around 150 to 200 kilometers away from Jerusalem, right? And today, 200 kilometers is nothing for you and I, because we can just hop into our car and we can just go, and in 2 hours we'll arrive at our destination. But this is history. These guys didn't have the cars that we had today. So that journey of 200 kilometers was actually a very long journey. But David said, I don't care actually of, how long it's going to take. I don't care, whether this man is crippled or not, that I am going to make the means to go search him out. I don't care whether he doesn't feel that he is worthy. I don't care whether he doesn't feel that he's useful. I don't care whether he doesn't feel that he's strong because he's crippled in both feet, that I will make amends to go and search him out. So I love the fact that the only question that David asked, even after they told him, this man is crippled, he said, where is he? Where is Mephibosheth? And I believe this morning that this is a question of grace that God is asking you and I, and saying, where are you? Where are you this morning? Now, when I say God doesn't care whether this morning you came in with feelings of feeling a bit crippled by circumstances, by your past, by where you've been, He does not care even this morning where you're even hiding and maybe even taking fig leaves, and trying to hide your sin or trying to hide the cracks that we this morning have heard about in a prophetic word. He doesn't care about where you finding yourself, whether you feel like you are far off from. He does not care whether you feel like you're not worthy of His love. This morning, He cares about finding you. This morning, He cares about you. That He wants to make Himself known to each and every single one of us. This is the heart of God, that even in the beginning, it's always been God's nature to reach out to us. It's always been God's heart to reach out to us, that even after Adam and Eve sinned, that God didn't come and say, okay, I'm going to zap you guys because you've sinned. No, He asked one question. He said, where are you? That's the question that He asked. Where are you? So this morning, even if we're sitting here with just feelings of condemnation, we're feeling maybe with feelings that, man, I've made so many mistakes of my life. We're sitting with feelings this morning of saying, man, there's so many different things that I actually regret this morning as I look at my life. That God, the question that He's asking this morning is, where are you? Because I want to make myself known to you. When God asked Adam and Eve this question, He didn't lack any information about where they were. He knew exactly where they were. But God was actually interested in them. He was actually interested in reconciling that relationship, because they were at a place where they felt like they were not worthy of God's love. And God, actually, what he was doing in that moment is he was reaching out to them and saying, even in your state, I want to save you. So Romans 5, 6 to 8 reminds us this morning, and it says the following. It says, for while we were still weak, at the right time, Christ died for the ungodly. That is you and I. For one will scarcely die for a righteous person, though perhaps for a good person, one would dare even to die. But God shows his love for us in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. I mean, how incredible is that? That while you and I were still sinners, while you and I were unlovable, while you and I were far away from God, that Christ, it says, he died for us. So this morning, as we look at this verse, we realize that God's grace is actually not reactive this morning. That God's grace actually initiates the relationship. That God actually, his kindness and his mercy and his love for us actually drives him to a point of saying, man, I want you and I want to reach out to you. So regardless of how far you think you are from me, that I'm here and I want to draw you close into intimacy. So God, rich in mercy and love, he devised a plan. Just like David devised a plan to say, I don't care where Mephibosheth is. I don't care what baggage he has. I don't care how far removed he is. I want him. I really believe that just like David devised a plan to reach out to Mephibosheth, that God actually devised a plan in Jesus to reach out to you and I this morning. And I'm really hoping that this morning that there'll be someone who's maybe sitting here and that you'll recognize the fact that you could have been at any other place this morning. That you could have done any other thing. That you could have stayed at home this morning. But God decided that this morning that you would sit in this service. And that this would be the message that you would hear. That this would be the thing that you will hear to say that he loves you. To say that he wants you. To say that his grace is sufficient for you. To say that, man, he wants to draw you out of the darkness you maybe think you are. He wants to draw you into his light. So we were lost. Grace found us. And then thirdly, the point that I want to end off with is we are now called to live in intimacy with God. That we are now called to live closely to him. So in 2 Samuel 2, in 2 Samuel 9, verse 11, verse 13, you hear these words repeated. Mephibosheth ate at the king's table always. And I want you for a moment just to step, you know, back into history with me and to try for a moment to step into the shoes of Mephibosheth. To say that you are a man who probably by this age, around 25 years to 30 years old, and you're finding yourself at the place where you were actually so far removed, and now God has restored your lot and has restored your story to such an extent that you're finding yourself eating at a king's table. Imagine just for a moment, you and I, like right now, we get a call to say, Godfrey, President Ramaphosa actually wants you tonight to fly out into Cape Town where he is, and he wants you to go have dinner with him. I promise you, even if it was just for one night, I would feel special. Like I would feel like, man, like what did I do to deserve for the president of the country to invite me to sit on table with him? But what happened here with Mephibosheth, it even far exceeds even the example that I just used now. That this man who was far removed finds himself at a place where over so many different years of having the questions that he had, the trauma that he had, you know, far thinking, God, is my life actually going to be transformed? Is anything in my life going to change? I can imagine the amount of questions that this man, night in and night out, might have sat with. I can just imagine the psychological trauma that this man sat with. And then one faithful day, God, in his kindness, remembered Mephibosheth. And he said, Mephibosheth, you will eat at the king's table always. You will eat at the king's table daily. You will eat at the king's table for the rest of your life. We see a man who was moved from being an outcast into communion with the king. We see a man who was forgotten, but now known by the king. We see a man who for many, many years probably lived in fear, but now he's experiencing the favor of the king. We see a man who was from Lodabar, and now because of God's grace, he found himself at the king's table. And this is our story. This is you and I's story. So in Ephesians 2, verse 4 to 6, Paul says the following to the church in Ephesus. He says, "But God, being rich in mercy, because of the great love with which he loved us, even when we were dead in our trespasses, he made us alive together with Christ. By grace you have been saved, and raised us up with him, and seated us with him in the heavenly places in Christ Jesus." I'm going to read the second one in Ephesians 2, 13 to 19 in the same chapter. He says, "But now in Christ Jesus, you who once were far off have been brought near by the blood of Christ. For he himself is our peace, who has made us both one and has broken down in his flesh the dividing wall of hostility by abolishing the law of commandments expressed in ordinances. That he might create in himself one new man in place of the two, so making peace, and might reconcile us both to God in one body through the cross, thereby killing the hostility." And then listen to these words. "And he came and preached peace to you who are far off, and peace to those who are near. For through him we both have access in one spirit to the Father. So then, you are no longer strangers and aliens, but you are fellow citizens with the saints and members of the household of God." How incredible is this verse? And I hope that if you're a believer this morning, that there is something leaping in your heart and in your mind, in your spirit, to say, "I was made alive with Christ." To say that I was saved from the power of sin and death. That I am seated right now with Christ in heavenly places. That I have communion with God. That I have been brought near by the blood of Christ. That I am no longer a stranger and an alien. That I am a member of the household of God. That is you and I this morning. That is how God has actually rewrote the story of our lives. And this is not just an occasional visitation that God gives us, but it's a permanent access to Him, to the King of Kings. That man, Mephibosheth, I can imagine he had quite a nice time in the king's palace. But I promise you that what we are invited into, the intimacy and the love that God invites us into, you and I, far supersedes what Mephibosheth experienced. So just like Mephibosheth, you and I this morning are invited into ongoing intimacy with the King of Kings. And I hope this morning, as you look at your life, that you can see the extents that God has gone through. And that He looked at your situation, that He looked at your story and said, "I'm not going to leave you where you are. That I actually want to restore the relationship and the intimacy that you and I were actually meant to have in the first place." So I want to end off by speaking to two people this morning that for some of us, you're finding yourself at the place where you are a believer, where you know Christ. But if you are honest with yourself, that you actually still feel like a Mephibosheth, that you still feel like you are far away from God, that you still feel like there's no intimacy between you and the Father, that maybe your relationship with God, if you are honest with yourself, actually it's more laws and traditions than actually love and intimacy. And I want to tell those people that this morning I believe there's an invitation that God would want to give to you and say, "I want to draw you close to myself. That my son didn't die for you to just stay in the outer courts. That this morning we we read that God tore the veil. That when Jesus was crucified, that the curtain was torn into, giving you and I intimacy to step into the very holy of holies of God. So to you as a believer, this is what God would say to you this morning out of the book of Hebrews. He says, we do not have a high priest who's unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who was tempted in every way as we are tempted. And then he says, let us then with confidence draw near the throne of grace, that we may receive mercy and find grace for a time in need.